Our scripture reading for today is found in the Gospel according to Luke. We'll be doing Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. Now he was also saying to his disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and this manager was reported to him as squandering his possessions. And he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an accounting of your management, for you can no longer be manager.' Well, the manager said to himself, 'What shall I do, since my master is taking the management away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I am removed from the management, people will welcome me into their homes.' And he summoned each one of his master's debtors, and he began saying to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, 'Now how much do you owe?' And to that he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. And his master praised the unrighteous master manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by means of the wealth of the unrighteousness, so that when it fails, they will receive you into eternal dwellings. He who is faithful in very little things is also faithful in much. And he who is unrighteous in very little thing is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches? And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and wealth." The word of the Lord. Please be seated. So, I got to make a confession to you. It is the temptation of most every preacher that I know to avoid this passage altogether, to pretend like it's not even in the Bible, because it is so hard to wrap your mind around all the things that are going on in this particular story. John Calvin, the famous theologian, was like, "This is just a weird passage." This is a quote. "This is a weird passage. I don't want anything to do with it." I don't think that was the exact quote, but it was something to that effect. And I looked at this passage and I was like, maybe I'll follow all the wisdom of the ages and skip this one altogether. But I spent some time really thinking about it, and I kind of like it. And I want to share with you why. Now, I don't know while you were listening to it, if there were some things that I kind of ended up like big stones along the path. You know, I do this all the time. You're driving your car and you hit a pothole and it surprised you and it kind of throws you off, even though, you know, these are little potholes that are going through as you're reading this. And because it has to do with wealth, it seems like Jesus is kind of praising a guy that was doing things on the sly, and yeah, you don't even know what's going on. I came across a rewrite of this passage, and I thought it was interesting, and I thought I would share this kind of rewriting of the passage with you, kind of in modern language. It says this: "Once there was a chief executive officer whose vice president of finance was reported to have badly managed company affairs. So the CEO said to the VP, 'Your performance is inadequate. Some would say you've been culpably negligent. Turn in your records and your keys and clear out of your office by 5 p.m. Well, the VP panicked. She was too old to look for a new job, too young to retire, and too proud to apply for unemployment. What was she to do? Then she had an inspiration. She accessed accounts receivable and chose three customers most behind in their payments. She called the first and said, "Tom, we're anxious to get this debt off our books. If you pay by the 15th, I'll give you a 25% reduction in your liability." To the second, she confided, "Bob, we've been conducting an internal audit. Found a few errors. What do your records show that you owe us? $46,000? No, according to my records, your debt's just $40,000. Well, then she informed the third company that a shipping error reduced the account by one-third. At the close of each conversation, she said that she planned to leave her present position soon and hoped they would keep her in mind. Later, when she walked out with reduced pension benefits, no health insurance, and a paltry sum for severance pay, there was a smile on her face, and within a month, she was hired as a consultant by each firm she had called that day. The next time her old boss saw her at the yacht club, she hurried to leave, but he caught up with her, slapped her on the shoulder, and said, "I gotta hand it to you. I couldn't have thought of a better scheme myself." Then Jesus said, "For the children of this world are more astute in dealing with their own kind than are the children of light. And so I tell you this, use money, tainted as it is, to win friends, and thus make sure that when it fails you, they will welcome you into the tents of eternity." That may not help some of you. And you're like, "I don't know, this still feels a little sketchy. It doesn't feel particularly honest. And why would Jesus be putting something out there that feels a little bit shady?" Jesus is great at telling stories. And I think that this is one of those stories that Jesus is using to communicate something about generosity, about how we are remembered. On September 1st, we started talking about those marks of a healthy church. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of hovering around the idea of being hospitable, about welcoming people. Last week, we were actually practicing hospitality by welcoming Urban Promise with us. We've been talking about remembering those who can't be with us. And there are a number of those people, and it's not just remembering as far as like, oh, and have a good thought about them. We're not talking about thoughts and prayers here. We're talking about actually remembering people and then going and seeing them or caring for them. Well, we're still kind of hovering around those ideas in Hebrews 13. And there was that one portion of Hebrews 13 that talked about our wealth. It talked about being free from the love of money and trusting God with our care. And so I wanted to hover around this idea of money today because we brought it up on September 1st, and it's here now. So I'm going to do something that you're not going to expect. All of a sudden you hear me talk about money. There's a money plan here, and you go, oh man, this is when he's going to ask us for money. No, I'm not going to. And that might not be something that you expect. Because you all know, we're part of the same community. You all know far better than I what it takes to run this community. There are people doing all kinds of things in all kinds of little pockets, and you all are giving generously because that's what it takes to run our little faith community corner of the world. It takes money to do that, to do all the good that we do as a community. But this is not about putting more money in the offering plate. We want to talk about what it means that once we have brought all of those resources together, what does it mean for us as a church to be generous, to not just be a charity and spend most of the money on ourselves, but to truly be generous. This parable is not a celebration of acting unscrupulously. This parable is about how we use the resources that we have been given to truly make a difference in the world. I've been thinking about our relationship with wealth. You know, from the outset, we think about, well, of course, we celebrate people that are incredibly wealthy, right? It's people, a nice car goes up Hillcrest Road, and we're like, ooh, look at that guy who's not stopping here. Wouldn't it be nice? You know, it pulled in and shared with us the resources that were able to purchase his Ferrari. Or just let me drive it today. You know, we think about that we have this celebration of wealth and celebrity, but then I really started thinking about it. We only really celebrate wealth and celebrity while it's active. While people are wealthy, while people are doing things that we kind of wish that we could do, we celebrate that. We watch their television shows. We wish we had their car for an afternoon. We, you know, watch, see them on Instagram and follow all their exploits. But the problem is that it doesn't last in even our own cultural consciousness. Because as soon as those people are no longer with us, whether they pass away or whether their wealth passes away by some scandal or some loss, we tend to lose interest. Those people we no longer follow anymore because they're no longer the powerful and the wealthy or the interesting. And so I started thinking about who are the people that we remember. We keep coming back to this word, right? Remember. And we all want to be remembered. We all want to make a difference. We all want our life to have lasted. And I started thinking about the people we actually remember. I couldn't remember anyone that we remember fondly solely because of their wealth and power. And I tried. I was really trying to think about who we remember people, and as far as they live in infamy, but to truly remember simply because they were successful. But I could think of a ton of poor people who we remember because of their kindness and their generosity. You know, there's, of course, the big players, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, you know, but that list goes on and on and on of the people that we look at and we remember them because of the generous difference that they made in our lives, in the world around us. You know, we remember those people because they live as examples of what it means to be truly human, about what it means to live. They became known not for their wealth. They became known for their extravagant generosity. And I appreciate that here in this story, Jesus seems to be taking the idea of wealth and widening our ideas of generosity beyond the idea of charity, of simply giving a portion out to the people who need it. You know, charity, as it's been developed in our culture, has honestly become one of the most effective tools of keeping people poor. Because the wealthy makes a decision about how much of their wealth that they're willing to give to put a meal on a table or to clothe or to do something that solves somebody's temporary needs. But one thing our culture does not do well is make room for people to be able to develop their own wealth and to get out of poverty. It was the French existentialist author Albert Camus that said, "Too many have dispensed with generosity in order to practice charity." And I thought, how interesting that we have exchanged the idea of being charitable with the idea of being generous. And I feel that Jesus is using this parable of this manager, this shrewd manager. I don't, by the way, see any crime that this guy has committed. He's just being shrewd. He admittedly is doing this with selfish intent, but he is generously relieving people of the burden that they face. So I want to be clear. This manager is not cutting into this landowner's business. I want to take a brief moment and explain what's going on here. And maybe this will have this parable make sense. This landowner is all he does. He just owns land. And if you own land in the first century, that was a commodity, a resource that you had that you could make money with. Now, how do you make money if you just own a bunch of land? Well, you rent out portions of that land to people who do not have land so that they can, anybody know? They can plant crops so that they can farm. If you are a farmer, what do you need? Land, right. If you are a farmer that does not have land, you have to figure out how to get land. There's a guy that's got some land, and so they rent a portion of that land. Now, if you're a farmer and you need land in order to plant crops to make money and you don't have any money, how do you rent this land? You make an agreement with the landowner and say, all right, can I use a portion of your land? And when all of my crops come through, you will receive a portion of my produce. That's the way that this guy was making money. Now, he had a servant whose job it was to manage his incredible land holdings. That's what this guy's job was. Now, apparently, this guy was using this guy's wealth for his own, let's call it, comfort. In fact, the same description of this steward right here, the same description is used in the prodigal son. You know, where it says that he spent his wealth lavishly on, you know, on fine food and friends and all that. Same description here. So you get a guy that is a servant. He's not making any money. He potentially is even a slave. He's working for this landowner. He's got all of this land. He's got these people that are kind of working for him. And he is totally living off the fat of the land. And word gets out. So this landowner starts hearing from his other landowner friend. They say, hey, you know what the word on the street is, right? Word on the street is that you're getting robbed blind because this guy's throwing parties for his friends and, you know, there's a vineyard over there. He's making use of your vineyard. Let's just put it that way. And just goes on. He's living this lavish lifestyle. And honestly, man, he's embarrassing you. That's what this phrase is. Because notice this landowner comes and says, I have heard this about you. Now I want an account of everything that you have been doing. Ooh, that's scary. Because this guy knows that if he gives an account of everything that he's been doing, he's out on his ear. And he's like, I've been living too lavish of a lifestyle. I don't want to go beg, and I certainly don't want to go dig ditches or do anything like that. So I've got to come up with this idea. And so he goes to these tenant farmers and says, how much did we agree that you were going to give my master? 100 bushels? All right, drop it down to 80. How much was it you? Oh, 100? Drop it down to 50. Because what he was doing was now all of a sudden the situation had changed. His generosity was not from good reasons, but it was still so generous because what it did was that those tenant farmers now, instead of just growing enough and being able to only keep a meager amount so they can make it to the next season, that potentially they now had the power to make a little extra. Maybe they could buy their own land or a cow or some tools that they need to do. What that manager did, even though he was doing it by poor resources, what he did is he freed people, gave them power, gave them the tools to be able to do the things that could grow their own life, grow their own family. You notice it wasn't a criminal act by any stretch of the imagination. The steward had the ability to do whatever the steward wanted to do with this. And choosing for his own gain, choosing generosity, meant that he, when he got fired, and he knew that was coming, when he got fired, he knew that he was going to be able to be welcomed with open arms to all the people that he was kind to. He was going to be remembered. I thought about that. I want to kind of end with this story. So I wanted to get a phone for my mother, a cell phone. She's turning 80 and she's used to have this this burner phone. You know what I mean? Like basically she just bought this phone. She never used it. Paid for a certain amount of minutes, I believe about 12 years ago, and has just now run out of minutes in her phone after 12 years. It came to be, she went to the store and says, well, I need this phone, you know, reloaded. And they looked at the phone and was like, no, we don't, this is not a phone we're going to reload. And so she came in and said, can I get a phone? I said, sure, I'll just add you to my account. That's no big deal. And so I was like, I'll get her one of the cool new iPhones, and that'll be really great. And she has an iPad, so she's kind of learned that interface. And it's like, oh, it's wonderful. Go to AT&T. And of course, companies are making all kinds of mergers and doing all kinds of things. And so I go to AT&T, and it's like, oh, this is great. Here's the new phone. We're going to give you the older models. It's free. She won't care. I'm like, yeah, that sounds wonderful. That sounds great. And then he goes, oh, there's an outstanding bill. And I'm like, an outstanding bill? I pay my bill every month. What are you talking about? Like, that's crazy. It says it's an outstanding bill for DirecTV. It's like DirecTV. AT&T and DirecTV have merged and created. So I said, DirecTV? I don't even have DirecTV. And he said, all right, well, let me look. Come to find out that apparently when I moved from my last apartment to here, one more bill came to the house. I didn't know that, but one more bill came to the house, and there's been this outstanding bill for DirecTV for 8 years. Hanging out, right? Hanging out, gaining interest over the course of 8 years. And he said to me the number, and I said, that's crazy. Like, you know, I don't have the ability to do that, but let me think about that because I want to pay my bills. I want to do that. The lady on the other side says, hold on just a minute. Goes away for a while. I get to listen to some little music and hanging out. She comes back and she says, Sarah, don't worry about it. We've taken care of your bill. It's wiped away. It's gone. I'm sending out your mom's phone right away. Cool, right? You know what? I don't care what deal comes down the pike from any other cell phone company. You know what I'm going to be? An AT&T customer, right? Because they forgave me. They were generous with me. I think about our resources that we have. How do we as a church want to be perceived in our community? Do we want to be thought of as the church with the beautiful building, but you don't really know what's going on inside? Or do we want to be known as this place that is generous in our community? We have resources here that are impossible to calculate. You realize we're sitting on land that is worth multiple millions of dollars in the community of Watchung. It's our resources, and we get to share it with people. We have human resources that are here that some of you have skills that I don't even know about. And I'm not talking about money. Some of you can do things that are mind-blowing, that can serve our community, and we do it without any kind of gain. I would love for Wilson Memorial Church that as people pass by, I always make the joke that people, whenever I tell people where I am, they always go, what church is that? And I describe it, and they say, oh, anybody know what that phrase is going to be? I pass that church all the time, right? I pass that church all the time. I'm like, dude, you're killing me. Stop describing us as the church you pass all the time. I would love instead be that church. That church is generous. That church uses their resources to transform this community. I can tell you about my family was in trouble, and that church showed up for me in a big bet. They didn't even know me, and they showed up for me. You all have the wisdom here. And this is my challenge for you today as we close. There are some creative minds here. And I'd love to tap into the creativity of our community. We do give charitably, and a lot of us contribute to the work of this local expression of faith. And we've built an incredible institution that our town can see. We are so visible. We're audible, actually, about once an hour. We're audible. We're on blankets. We're on throw rugs. We're on Watchung throw rugs. There's a picture of our church. We're on the Boy Scout flag. Did you know that? We are literally on the Boy Scout flag that's here. But how do we use our resources to do the work of the kingdom of God, to increase opportunity, and to make this a place that people remember so that as they pass, they say, that's a place that loves me. I don't know what ideas the Spirit of God might rise up inside of this community. I'm imagining they would be amazing. And I'm going to challenge you to take that to prayer and to say, I have this resource, we have this resource. What if we did this? Share it with me, and then let's see where we can go. The parable of the steward that loved well. Let's call it that.